Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. We are live tonight, and I am very, very, very happy to have Dr. Cindy Brannon today on our show. Dr. Brannon is a psychologist, author, and teacher. She teaches and writes from the crossroads of psychology, spirituality, and traditional wisdom, merging ancient knowledge with modern practices. Her work explores the journey through darkness to wholeness, using the archetypes of the witch and Hecate. Her teaching focuses on professional healing through herbalism, rituals, meditation, and exploration of the deeper self. She founded the Covina Institute, a soul school dedicated to the pursuit of wholeness through structured programs of study and transcendence. After years of a successful career in academia and healthcare, she transitioned to teaching and writing about reclaiming the sacred feminine through spiritual practices after she became convinced that mainstream psychology was not sufficient to lead to personal wholeness. Her writing explores the archetype of the witch as a mechanism for healing from trauma and as a font of personal sovereignty, she examines the many faces of the goddess through mythology and personal experiences as a reflection of the feminine principle, the anima within. I am very honored to have her on the show, and I am also very happy because she is a wonderful person. Welcome, Dr. Brannon. How are you?
Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be able to chat with you.
I am so enamored of your work, and I was very, very fortunate to be present on an interview we did with the team of Mystic Chat last year, and I just fall in love of the way you express yourself about Hecate, and you made me fall in love with her. And I am very, very happy to have you here. And we're going to talk everything about Hecate in a few minutes. But before we go there, first of all, how are you?
I'm doing well. It was a beautiful sunny day here on the East Coast. I'm getting very excited because I live right on the open Atlantic. So our growing season is really short compared to most of the rest of the North America, but all my plants for this summer, they've spent the day outside. They're back around the fireplace now, and tomorrow is going to be planting day. So I am like, whatever happens in the world tomorrow, I get to enter Hecate's garden in the very physical sense, which I love. So anything can happen, and as long as I can get all nice and dirty in the flower beds tomorrow, I'll be good.
That is wonderful, and anything can happen is actually the motto of this show. I don't know if you knew that, which was a little bit of an adventure when we first started the show, because, you know, when you are a witch and you name your show Lunatic Mondays, and then your motto is anything can happen. Anything happens, and Mercury retrograde and all these kind of disconnections when we're trying to connect. So it is indeed a wonderful expression, right, to be able to say anything can happen and I'm just going to be happy. And that is wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you get to play in the dirt, you know. So how is the weather? How is everything for you? Are you working on new books? Are you actually taking some time off? What's happening this summer for you?
Well, I mean, it's been a long, over a year for all of us, right? And I mean, we are finally starting to get a little bit of a break from the stars above, and also with so many of us getting vaccinated and starting to be able to get out into the world a little bit. So I think things are starting to change overall. And certainly, you know, I've been feeling that here. You know, the sun is in Gemini. That's where my sun, you know, my birthday is in a few days. And us Geminis, we like to be busy. We're always busy. We're either up to good or we're up to evil. I try to keep in the good, productive strain of things. But, you know, Geminis, we're always busy. So I, of course, am always busy. So when people ask me if I'm taking some time off, I'm like, oh, I took most of yesterday off. And what is time off? Because I love what I do. You know, I'm so blessed to do what I do, to write the books I write, teach the courses I teach, and to have my institute. You know, I love it. So right now, if you want to know, this is like, you know, the inside scoop of my glamorous workday. I've the past few days doing the academic calendar from September of this year to June of next year. So setting dates for the courses I teach, our rituals, our different curriculum that we put out every moon month, because, you know, I love the name of your show, Lunatic Monday, because I'm all about Lunaria. I even called mm-hmm. my monthly curriculum in this school Lunaria, because so we follow the lunar schedule. So I've been looking at the astrology and everything else to set all the dates for the fall and winter and spring terms. So that's not terribly exciting, but it's done. So I'm happy to talk to you, because I was like, I'm going to have that curriculum done before I hang out with Laura. So you were my carrot, Laura.
Good. Do you know if you have any Virgo on your chart?
I have, just a second, just looking it up. I always forget about Virgo. Where is my Virgo?
And there's a reason why I'm asking. I'm gonna let people into a little secret. Cindy will not let me lie that we planned this interview about 8 months in advance. And I usually, when I go to my guests and I say to them, hey, can I interview you for my show, you know, within 7 months? They usually look at me like if I'm, you know, lunatic for real. And then I'm like, no, I have to book like that because I produce, like, you know, a number of shows. And you are the only person who actually said, wonderful, I love that we are planning so far in advance. And I'm like, thank you, this day by day when you said that, you know, because it needs to, I think when people are busy like you are, like all the other authors and people who are busy working on the pagan world or anywhere for that matter, it's great to have such an advanced calendar, you know, and that's why the Virgo question was coming from.
All right, so I'll tell you. So I have some outer placements in Virgo. Pluto, my Pluto is in Virgo, and my Uranus is in Virgo. So I knew there were some outer placements lurking in Virgo, but none of the original Sacred Seven or the heavy hitters, you know, that are in Virgo. Virgo is just kind of like out there for me somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so, I mean, I think for being Gemini, the gifts of Virgo and even Capricorn, which I have no Capricorn in my chart at all, to me to lean into those archetypes so I can be successful and be focused and harness like my Gemini energy, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yes, it does. How did you get into witchcraft? I started the interview not in the order, and I told you I was going to, and then I was picking myself for that, but we can reel it back in. How did you get into witchcraft and paganism? You called yourself a witch?
I do call myself a witch. you know, if like not, I don't like introduce myself at random places as witch, but you know, I do identify very strongly with the archetype of the witch, specifically, you know, the part of the archetype of the witch that's concerned with healing, and certainly working with the signatures of all things, you know, whether it's working with spirit or astrology or plants, and using them in a way like of connection, of deep connection. And I also identify, I would say, with the, I think what popularly people might call the dark goddesses, although I've always been uncomfortable with that label. Because I grew up very much as an outsider in my family of origin. I was always drawn to nature. I was always drawn to spirit. And in how I was raised in the Pentecostal faith, you know, the things I was naturally drawn to were taboo. I kind of occupied that space of being, you know, the girl who was the other, who was the one who didn't, you know, fit in with what was accepted in the family or my faith that I was raised in. So, you know, I really developed this kind of resonance with, I mean, I didn't know Hecate had a name at the time, but, you know, but characters, certainly Persephone, who, you know, represented being other, not fitting in, and also often feeling like, you know, you were somewhere in the underworld, because growing up, I clearly wasn't of the same ilk family in my, you know, I guess my community. So I've always been that one, you know, been that one who kind of occupies the margins, is really interested in the deeper world. The deeper world always fascinated me, even when I was in graduate school. So my training in graduate school, my master's and my PhD, I studied human attachment, human relationships, and we do these big things called comprehensive. So it's like, it's not quite like a dissertation, but there are these other really big research projects, and I really petitioned hard to be able to do a comprehensive on exploring the self, and including the works of William James, who certainly is one of the great American philosophers that really was out there talking about the deeper world and what the self and what the soul was. So I was successful, and I managed to write my paper with including William James. So I've always had that thread that I've been pursuing into the mystery.
Mm-hmm. And how, so you were always into nature, you were always into stuff that were not necessarily the cup of tea of your family of origin. And when did you discover that this is something that people commonly call witchcraft or the occult sciences or stuff like that? How did you discover, I'm a witch?
I think it was I was in a store in Boston, not Salem, but I was in a store in Boston and stumbled into a book, Scott Cunningham, and thought, ooh, well, this feels right. You know, it kind of felt like I opened a door to a room that maybe wasn't my specific room, but it was a room that was comfortable to me. And I just followed that thread from there. You know, I was really fortunate to grow up during the late 80s and, you know, into the 90s and come of age, you know, during that period. And that's when a lot of these books were becoming available for the first time. So I think for me, it was very like synchronous that others were writing about, like you said, Wicca, witchcraft, paganism. And I was able to kind of stumble, you know how it goes. You don't know why you're in that bookstore. You don't know why that book just, you walk right to that book and that book points you in a direction. And opens that door and off you go through that door.
Mm-hmm. And you never come back, because once you open your eyes, you can't close them. You know, that is a wonderful.
Once you cross that threshold, right? Like you cross that threshold and you're like, wow, this world is huge and beautiful and there's so much in it.
Yeah. So coming to the other side of you and healing, I am just fascinated with psychology. And how did you get into the world of psychology?
Well, this is really interesting. And if I tell the truth of the story, we're going to have to do a little bit of time travel. Are you up for it, Laura? Because we've got to go back in time.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So so I've told the story about, you know, finding some books. Mm-hmm. And this is all around the time that I was graduating high school. So here we are, you and I are back here in time, and I had a baby when I was really young.
Mm-hmm.
And I took some time kind of transitioning, you know, into motherhood, and then decided to go to university. And so I went to university, the local university, because, you know, I had this baby to look after. And then I did well, so I decided I knew I wanted to go into some kind of professional studies, and I decided to go into psychology. It was psychology or the law, and completely, to be honest, I had a much better scholarship offered to me for psychology that I knew I'd be able to keep me and my oldest son, you know, housed and fed while I went to school. So I mean, I've always been fascinated with human behavior, and I think the law and psychology are both very different, but similar in that they're both studies in human behavior. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's how I got started. Have a very serendipitous experience of finding an undergraduate honor supervisor who was able to open a lot of doors to me because, you know, my family, I don't come from a family that goes to college, so I was the first in my family to go to college. Didn't really know how any of this worked, if you can imagine. And my supervisor, who is just a lovely, lovely man, he, you know, kind of pointed me in the right direction, and then I was able to do my master's and my doctorate studying close relationships, and it was really just, you know, intense. If you know anybody who's gone through the process of getting their doctorate in psychology, it's an intense period. It takes about 7 or 8 years. But I had great friends and did great research and really, really just had a wonderful experience looking back now while mm-hmm. raising a child.
Wow. Wow.
See, now I'm just like, how did you do that, Cindy?
Yes. Well, Super Cindy, I guess. You know, it's the sheer willpower and necessity to finish what you started and, you know, getting to be the best, I guess, you know, because there no cannot be an answer, not when you have a family to feed, you know.
I think you're so right. I think that
yeah.
it's such a motivation, right? Like when you want to build a better life, not only for yourself, but also your child. I think it's a powerful motivation. And of course, you know, looking back now and looking back all these years, you know, I feel very much that I was on the right path for the work I do now, for me to have that depth of experience in understanding you know, our inner life and also relationship dynamics, the consequences of trauma, and mm-hmm. how to make those things better in a way that people can do on their own outside of therapy, because therapy is so inaccessible for so many of us,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, lots of reasons. So, I feel like there was a trajectory. There was a greater plan at play that I was caught up in, and you know, looking back, I sometimes it seems like, you know, sometimes it seems like, well, what did you do that for? But then when you start to gain some perspective, you see like it all kind of weaves together into the tapestry of your life.
Mm-hmm. And you were so ahead of your time, I think, on combining psychology and, you know, traditional healing magic, et cetera, because it is deep work, you know. I have a personal pet peeve. Of course, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor like you. But I understand certain concepts because I like learning and I like reading. And I, as I was telling you behind the scenes, I collect psychologists for friends. And some of my teachers on magic, on the magic arts, are psychologists. So I understand certain concepts such as the inner child or shadow work or deep-rooted trauma and stuff like that. And then you go to, and not to talk about a place in particular, but for example, this healing place or this yoga place or whatever, and they say, come to our 3-hour seminar and heal your inner child. And I'm like, let me flip the desk because, you know, this concept gets so watered down. And some people just take the terminology and are not really providing deep healing, I think. So my question, I guess, is how far back do you roll your eyes when you see something like that?
Well, I can definitely see the roots of my hair.
I'm going to borrow that. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
But I, but there's so much to unpack in what you said, and what you said is so true. And I think it's so important. And I love that you brought our conversation to this place, because I think there's so much to talk about in here. I understand, like, you know, as witches, right, we understand things are archetypal, and the things that are archetypes have power and influence and have a consciousness. And for me, I think when people, you know, hear about shadow work, well, the shadow, you know, it's an individual aspect of ourselves, but the shadow as an archetypal force that permeates, you know, the whole world exists. So I think people, there's an allure to it that, you know, they know it thrums with something. And so they may come at it and think that they understand, what, for example, what shadow healing is, and get kind of caught up in it. And then, you know, like you said, you know, maybe do a class or something without, you know, having spent 25 years studying psychology and shadow work, and really, you know, understanding that it's a long process. It's not something that's fixed in a 3-hour workshop. For sure, I could give you a 2-hour talk about shadow work or healing the inner child, or, you know, different aspects of that. But that's not gonna, that might open, you know, it might open a door for you to realize that there is a better way to live your life. That you can, you know, with time and effort, both practical and spiritual practices, that you can heal into your own wholeness. You can, you know, you can individuate, as we would say in psychology. But I got to tell you, it can't be done in 3 hours. I'm pretty damn sure it can't be done in 3 months. And and if you could do it in 3 years, well, send me an email and we'll talk, because it's a lifelong process. We're never
exactly.
done.
Exactly. You know, I tell my colleagues and students and friends, like, you know, when we stop learning about our shadow is when we are dead, because there's no more work to do anymore. You know, that's when you're done. That's when you're finished. And it is, you know, all this, again, concepts, you know, like such as like the archetype, you know, and sometimes as a tarot reader, as a tarologist or a tarotologist, whatever form you like to say it, that I see people, sometimes they grab a card, you know, such as like, I don't know, strength, and they're talking about, oh yeah, you have to exercise. And I'm like, no, that's not what the card is about, you know, and, oh, yeah, but that's the archetype. And then people so adamantly saying that Carl Jung used to read the tarot, and I'm like, let's not talk about that. let's move on into other more pleasant things. But I am so fascinated because, you know, the work that you do and then combining it with the magic of Hecate and looking at that archetype through the feminine divine, healing the anima for everybody, not only for women, but for every person of every gender that needs to be healed because it's been so harmed for thousands of years.
And I think this is so important, and I'm glad you touched upon how reclaiming the sacred feminine, reclaiming anima, anima mundi, the soul of the world as feminine, is something for all genders. You know, it's not an exclusionary path because we all have, you know, we to varying degrees, are comprised of anima and animus, which is the masculine force. In various degrees and, of course, in different configurations and so on. But we've lived in a cultural landscape so dominated by, you know, the animus that's about conquest, colonialism, you know, appropriation, all these words. And reclaiming, you know, the sacred feminine as an antidote to that kind of excessive energy of a very certain type of masculinity, because, I mean, all masculinities, of course, aren't like that. But so it's really, to me, it's vital for us as individuals, and it's also very important for us collectively. And, you know, as witches or whatever you want to call yourself, if you are someone who is dialed into the deeper world, dialed into the, you know, the world of dreams and spirits, however you connect, angels, however you connect to the deeper world, doesn't really matter that much. But if you do it in a sense of like empowering and healing yourself, you know, that work shifts the collective, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, so much of what we've been going through these last several months. This shift in the collective energy of the world, because the world has a consciousness and the world, you know, basically it had enough and needed to bring us, literally to put us on a timeout, mm-hmm. you know, so we could start to reevaluate things.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, that's why.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It is fascinating we're seeing the ramifications of that shift with all these people that are not going back to, quote unquote, not going back to work. But it's actually not going back to work. It's taking the opportunity to find better ways to live and not just to survive. And how it's breaking down into the people who understand that, empathize, and are working towards helping humankind. And those who cannot understand will never empathize and feel the need to say, oh, people just like to take handouts. And it is way deeper than that. And also the generation that complains about everything and needs safe spaces. Yeah, because we've been bullying them. They need safe spaces so they can recover. You know, all of this is bubbling to the surface, and it's just a fascinating time to be alive.
I completely agree. It is a fascinating time to be alive. Not an easy time to be alive, but it's fascinating to see, and to see, you know, how we can come together now through technology and lift our voices and lift the voices of others. You know, I've always, you know, I'm such a fan of Mercury, and we can use his gifts of communication, you know, to have conversations like this. And to mm-hmm. come together in ways that was never possible before.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Mercury. You know I'm dedicated to him. So yes, Daddy.
I know.
All right. I cannot believe we are already in the half an hour mark. So at times flies when you're having fun. Indeed. We're going to go to listen to this beautiful song. And it's a very good opening to start talking about the lady. We're going to listen to the song Hecate by Wendy Rule. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Hecate with, of course, the expert, Dr. Cindy Brannon. So don't go anywhere. We're coming back with more here on Lunatic Monday. Mondays, building bridges of community around the world. We'll continue with more. Don't go anywhere. Hello, we're back here on Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And I just want to tell you real quick that today is the first of three Hecate-focused shows on both Lunatic Mondays and Paganos del Mundo. So please follow us on June 7th if you speak Spanish. We're going to listen from the archives of Lunatic Mondays, the interview with Jaide Hernando Solcire, and she will be talking to us about Hecate and her devotion. And she's been a Hecate priestess for like 20-some years. So you don't want to miss that. And then also for those who speak English, we're going to have Reverend Mufeder and Reverend Medina talking about a virtual summer Pagan Spirit Gathering. The Pagan Spirit Gathering is going to happen on June 25th to 27th. And you can register at paganspiritgathering.org, or you can register at circlesanctuary.org/CSG. That is going to be on the main pages of CSG and Circle Sanctuary. And registration is only $75. And there's going to be a whole bunch of events that weekend. And they're going to be talking to us on Lunatic Mondays all about that. And then on June 28th, we will have Reverend Tiffany Andes talking about casting and divination. And for those who like to listen Paganos del Mundo on Spanish and Portuguese, we have Christine Ortiz with Folkloric Magic and Mexican Traditions. We have yours truly on the 12th, speaking about Monarcas, the butterflies, the monarch butterflies, and a rescue team here in Chicago. We're going to talk about another Hecate show with Harwet Uleva from Spain. She's going to be talking about Hecate y la magia helenista. And on Portuguese with Patricia Finkler talking, she's going to be interviewing Mateus Richter. So don't miss the shows. Obviously, you have Moon Magic, Circle Talk, and Selena Fox's shows, Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality. And with that being said, we welcome back Dr. Cindy Brannon. How are you?
I'm doing good. That's quite a lineup you've got coming up. I'm so happy you're doing many shows about Hecate. And the show about butterflies sounds fascinating. I love butterflies.
It is fascinating. They are this group of women, and thank you for noticing that. They are Mexican immigrant women here in Chicago who just got together because the son of one of them wanted to rescue butterflies. And it has become this huge movement because milkweed is considered a weed, and they kill it. And with killing the milkweed, you're killing the butterflies. And we recorded this show last year, and I figure it's just right to, you know, play it again because people need to do what we can to save the planet. And when I interviewed these women, they didn't consider themselves activists. And I'm like, oh, darling, you are so activist with what you're doing. You're saving the planet. So it is a wonderful show. Of course, it's in Spanish. So I invite you all to listen to it. Listen to it. You will get some stuff. You will understand some stuff, even if you don't understand Spanish fully. But back to you, please, and the main lady. How did you meet Hecate?
Well, this is a bit of a funny story. I had been really fascinated by different faces of the goddess, beginning with Persephone and then Artemis. When I was in an English class, I discovered through synchronicities that my name Cynthia is an epithet of Artemis, referring to her birthplace on Mount Kynthos, on the island of Delos, her mythic birthplace. So I had long been close to different goddesses. And I was on a real low point in my life. And one night, I don't know, maybe you've had this experience that you've got to go to work the next day. You know, you've got the kids to bed. The world is kind of settling down, but you still have a whole bunch of chores to do. So I was in the basement folding laundry. And just in that kind of meditative state you get in when you're half asleep, but you're still trying to do things. And all of a sudden, I heard a voice out of nowhere that said, it's time. And I knew that that voice was Hecate. But up until that point, I would say I had a very tertiary understanding of Hecate. You know, I'd certainly done rituals and cast spells and was a student of, you know, comparative religion and mythology and studying a lot of, you know, different ways of exploring the deeper world. But up until then, I didn't really know much about Hecate at all. Certainly wasn't looking for her and wasn't expecting her to show up in my life. I felt a little crazy, to be honest. It's different when you're contemplating a goddess, maybe in a meditation or a ritual, and when you actually think one is talking to you. And that one... So that launched me on a quest to understand Hecate's history, how others, you know, I'm a psychologist, I'm a researcher, so I'm always intrigued by how others experience Hecate. And so that launched me, which propelled me all those years ago. And let me tell you, at the time, I know Hecate has become very popular these days, but let me tell you, this goes back a long time. And, you know, when I would go to different circles, women's circles or pagan circles, and when people would say, you know, what goddess are you into, or somehow the conversation would turn and I'd end up talking about Hecate, it would kind of scare certain people a little bit because, mm-hmm. you know, she had such a reputation of being you know, a dark goddess, someone who occupies the dream world and, you know, leads her horde and so on. And, yeah, so that's how we got started. And we've been together ever since.
Mm-hmm. That is a wonderful story. And I love that you were told it is time. She certainly is very direct when she speaks. And if I may, I want to share something with y'all, with everybody listening. But before I do that, I want to kind of repeat something that we talk about when you were a guest on Mystic Chat, because I want the people who listen to the show to also hear this. I shy away from Hecate for a number of years because I didn't like violence. I didn't like revenge. I didn't like... my cauldron is shinier than yours and your athame is too short and, you know, this type of pettiness. And I have observed that a lot of people use Hecate as a weapon to scare others, to say, you know, don't ask with me because I'm going to throw you Hecate and I'm going to tell Hecate to set you straight and, you know, kind of like demeaning this wonderful goddess as a tool for harm and vengeful. And I did shy away from her for many, many, many years because of that. There is also this marketing of, you know, the temples of Hecate for a certain amount of money, you become a priestess. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to have nothing to do with that. And it wasn't until I interviewed Heidi Solcere, and then I interviewed you with the team of Mystic Chat, that I realized that that's wrong. that's not Hecate. That's not who I thought she is. She's somebody completely different. And you were telling us why she is all-inclusive and not a vengeful entity. And I don't know if you will remember the exact same words that you used then, but whatever flows and comes out of you right now, it should be wonderful to hear your opinion on that.
Well, I would say this. I would say Hecate's presence or is very different than being drawn to a figure that represents power. So can we just unpack that a little bit? Just walk with me through this, because I think when you've had these experiences, and I've had certain experiences like this, when people will say, oh, Hecate is going to get you, or you come across something and it's like a five-line spell for Hecate's wrath on so-and-so, you know, to me, that is like that person wants to feel empowered, and they have a perception of Hecate as a figure that is very powerful and perhaps wrathful, or, you know, someone who can bring justice. So to me, that you have that perception, and then you do something based on what you perceive, which is, and you, I know you've had personal experiences, Laura, that's very different than having an intimate experience where something deep within you cracks open and Hecate speaks. And I think that's an important distinction because, you know, when you look at the world today, so much of the world is about, you know, like diminish, like this power imbalance. And I think sometimes when people are really feeling disempowered, they are drawn to Hecate because they want to become empowered. And it's often like we may not have the tools to navigate that. But like you said, just be someone who's like, oh, Hecate is going to get you. And, you know, I can understand where those people might be coming from. I mean, I've certainly felt disempowered in my life, so I can kind of get why they might want to latch on to that. But I would say with Hecate, what you need to do is the opposite. This is something I say to my students is this. You don't work with Hecate. Hecate works on you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And it's your job, for the most part, just to pay attention.
Yes, indeed.
To what she is trying to do. You know, it's not, you know, so it's not this whole idea that, you know, if you do X, Y, and Z, Hecate is going to grant you a boon. It's like, just be still. You still do your meditation, learn about your dreams, learn how to truly study the cards because she, of course, speaks through the cards, and all will be well. Stop this frantic, frenetic business and learn to quiet yourself because she's already in your life and she's already trying to communicate, and it's your ego, your shadow, whatever you want to call it. That's making you either have a superficial perception of her, which of course can be a sign, you know, like just follow that to her depth. Hecate occupies the depth, right? So maybe that's just a sign for them to go deeper and to break through, you know, that ego kind of business where you just want to latch on to a goddess so you can get a better job or whatever it is. You know, we've all been. And I've been there. This is like the voice of experience. So I'm not, you know, saying that I haven't gone through similar phases back in the day myself. But I think that's the thing with Hecate. It's like, listen to her. Hecate is anima mundi, psychopomp. She is the soul guide. She's soul. And that's where she abides. So sit with yourself. And let her talk to you as she presents herself. And don't listen to the bullshit that people will try to spew at you. You know, you get people who are like, well, Hecate's history is this, and this is that, and the other thing. And it's like, look, I teach this. I write books. I teach courses. I have a whole organization. And I am here to tell you that Hecate will come to you in the way you are meant to receive her. So don't get wrapped up in dogma. Don't get wrapped up in what you see, like on social media. You know, turn inward. I think the journey of responding to Hecate is an inward journey at first because we need to go into that cave. We all do. And the whole thing that's wrong with the world today is that we've become addicted to artificial light and we've become addicted to false power rather than true empowerment.
Exactly. Exactly. And what I haven't told you is the very first couple of times she appeared with me was to relay messages, you know, during circle, to friends, to clients, etc. And then I interviewed Sosire last year, and then we interviewed you for Mystic Chat. And both of you made me fall in love with her and understand her more, who she really is. And she kept appearing, you know, kind of like her image, her name, things like that. And I was thinking, you know, after right after your interview, I want to do something to honor her. And I've heard you and Sosiris talking about, you know, just do an offering to her, do something from your heart and offer it to her. And I sat and I turned on the TV on a channel that I will normally never put on the TV. And the news were talking about the protest right after the murder of Mr. George Floyd. And the line on the bottom of the television said, Chicago at the crossroads. And I'm like, okay, now I know what you want. You know? So we baked a little something and we walked towards a river and a bridge. And then, you know, we offered something to her. And then that's when, and of course I bought a statue to have her statue here at my place. And it kind of went away. And I'm like, I'm so totally fine with that, because with me, it's very, I have learned to listen. And then she comes and she goes, and she comes and she goes. And she, because she knows I'm a communicator, right? So she will come and relay the message and ask for what needs to be done, and then she'll go away. And I'm like, cool. You know, this is so wonderful. But when I turned on the TV and the line was Chicago at the crossroads, I'm like, okay. And I had to wait a whole year to tell you, Dr. Brandon. So here we are. Here I am telling you, coming full circle with this. This is just fascinating. She is indeed fascinating. Thank you.
She is
for
so
listening.
Fascinating. It's a lovely story. And thank you for paying attention and sharing that story. You know, that it is those synchronicities and just paying attention. She's talking. You know, she's there. And you don't need to do elaborate rituals. I'm a dedicated ritualist. I teach a series of rituals called the Rituals of the Sacred Cave it's our annual cycle. And I'm also going to tell you that just paying attention and doing what you did, that's a beautiful ritual.
Yes. We bake her a cornbread, and I put on my love, and I'm like, hey, here, from a Mexican to a Greek goddess, I can, this is what I know how to do, and we're going to do it, and we offer to her, and it was wonderful. And thank you for listening. I feel like a little child that, you know, is saying like, hey, look what I can do. I said I needed to tell you. Anywho, my inner child is quite happy at this moment. I want to ask you about your books, obviously, because it will be so silly to let you go without asking about your books. The newest book that came out in 2020, and it's called Entering Hecate's Garden. Can you tell us a little bit about that book and how your books are doing and how you're doing with this turmoil of a year with this new book?
Well, first of all, I bake cornbread for Hecate as well. And in Entering Hecate's Garden, I have a monograph on corn. You know, it was a challenge to narrow it down to 39 plants for the book. I wanted to include corn because, for me, corn is so vital to our agriculture, to our food system. And we live in a world where, and this might be a little bit controversial, but I'm going to say it anyway, that because corn, the sugars from corn, have been so modified chemically in food processing that, you know, the high fructose corn syrup it's become almost like an addictive ingredient in a lot of packaged foods. I really want to, and I do in my private practice and in my teaching, to recorn. We're going to recorn. We're going to reclaim corn as sacred, and help to tip the balance of how corn is being used, you know, by the food conglomerates. So I do have a recipe for cornbread in Entering Hecate's Garden, if anyone would like to try it. I mostly eat no animal products, and I eat gluten-free. So I often bake cornbread for Hecate, cornbread for breakfast, and it's also animal-friendly. You know, we have a lot of raccoons and coyotes and other critters around here, so I know that if I leave it and they eat it, no one will get hurt.
That is beautiful.
I bet you didn't know we were going to end up talking about corn so much.
I didn't, but of course you know me being Mexican. I'm fascinated. I just posted on my Facebook that I'm so fangirling on you, and it shows my little avatar with the heart eyes. That's exactly how I am right now, because as a Mexican, we are the people of the corn. We are the children of the corn, and not in the bad movie way of saying, you know, we are the people of the corn. And to have this serendipitous conversation about cornbread and corn and Hecate, it's just, my heart is just like singing right now. It's beautiful, and it talks about the universal. It talks about anima mundi, you know. We are all so connected. I cannot have enough of you. And everything that, I love you.
Well, we could keep going about corn. It was just really important to me to feature a couple of plants that were indigenous to North America and to write monographs about it in a way, you know, I was attempting to be very respectful of corn, of maize. And I wrote about seaweed kind of as something that we have everywhere on the coast in North America. And so I wanted to include some plants like that because there can be, I know those exotic plants are so seductive, you know, frankincense and myrrh and so on. And we also, there's so much magic, like you said, in making your cornbread or whatever, however you work with grains, you know, whatever we make can be so magical. And we can really help to connect us to our culture, to the land. You know, being connected to the land is so important to me. So that's Entering Hecate's Garden. The Keeping Your Keys book continues to do really well. I'm always so humbled and also kind of slightly surprised at how this book has touched so many thousands of people. Giving a free talk as part of the publisher of the Keeping Your Keys book conference, MoonCon. So if you go to Moon Books on Facebook or anywhere on the internet, you can find another free event coming up on June the 5th. It's my birthday eve, so, you know, being a Gemini, it's hard to tell what's going to happen, but I'm supposed to give a lovely talk on Hecate on my birthday eve. And I'm teaching a 7-week course, I call it the Hecate Summer School, deeper into the lessons of the book in a 7-week period. I teach longer duration courses, but I know not everyone has the time for that, so this is like, We dive into the lessons a little bit and really give people a depth that you just can't get into in a book. So that Hecate Summer School is starting July the 2nd. And then the Mistai, which is the initiatory journey that I teach that is kind of rooted in the Keeping Your Keys book and also, of course, Entering Hecate's Garden, that begins again in September. I'm also working on a new book that I hope will be published in the fall of 2022 that is really going to be about, it should be called Entering Hecate's Cave, a bit of a follow-up to Entering the Garden of the Middle World, of the busy hubbub of life, of that heart energy. This is about getting to the root So I'm really looking forward to exploring depth psychology and practical things you can do. And also, of course, the magic, medicine, and mystery of Hecate in that book. And that the manuscript is about 85,000 words. So it's coming together. But, you know, I'm being, every book is a different baby. And this, this is very different, the process of writing this book. I've been writing it for over a year now. So that's what I'm up to these days.
That is, my goodness, that is a handful. And thank you for letting us know about all this summer school and the books and everything. I am looking at your website right now. So for those who don't know, keepingherkeys.com. And right there next to the home is the summer school. But there's also a whole bunch of podcasts and free stuff that she gives us, on this website. But all the information is there. And, of course, the books are here. So, folks, please go and visit keepingherkeys.com. And everything and anything about Dr. Brandon is there. Is there anything that Silly Me hasn't asked you yet that we need to know before we say goodnight?
I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Awesome. Happy, and then whatever's next right after that. Totally fangirling on you. Please forgive me for being too silly, but you're amazing. And every time that I talk to you, I'm more in love with your work. And I want to leave you the microphones so you can say goodnight to your audience tonight.
Well, good night, everyone. I'm just going to finish with a little verse, if I can just have a couple of seconds.
Of course.
A midnight walk with Hecate. I set out alone, bare feet on the path. The moon covers herself out of respect for our goddess. I think of the moon, of Hecate, and the earth beneath my feet. Torch-bearing guardian, guide along my path, and gatekeeper of the mysteries. Hail Hecate, and may you find great comfort and wisdom and magic by awakening to this beautiful, beautiful goddess, Anima Mundi. Thanks again for listening, and thanks so much, Laura. It was so fun to hang out with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brandon, for being here. I am very happy that you were able to make it. And thank you to everyone who is listening to the show, whether you're listening live tonight or you listen later. Remember that we are on all the platforms where you can get your podcasts from, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iBox, and others. And, of course, we will see you on the next Lunatic Monday. And until then, never forget that you are loved. Good night.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.